And then they stooped so low as to just blame shoulder pads for injuries. I couldn't believe that when they were like, it's not fighting, it's shoulder pads. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And then wrapping it off with the sob story of like, oh, hockey sucks now. Everything's changed. You can't just kill people on the ice anymore. It all sucks now. It was like the unbelievable cherry on top. Like I kind of switched my thinking halfway through this and started just like almost considering it as a mockumentary. It was just so far out of place.
All right, so if you are listening to this on the Bowlet feed, we're just going to keep chugging. If you're listening to this on the Brews and Bruins feed, welcome to our third episode of season three.
Have shitty, dumb seasons on that podcast, too?
Yeah, we do. I think we had like 30 episodes in season one. And then season two was 84 episodes just for no reason.
Nice. A nice even 84.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about Goon and Ice Guardians, and then we're going to go through our awards and also maybe play a game with Nate at some point and see what see how he does at that, being the least hockey guy out of the
spoiler alert.
Five
not well.
I feel like we should probably introduce ourselves because this is the new podcast. I am Zach. I am from Chris's other podcast, Bowlet.
I'm Nate. I'm also from Chris's other podcast, Bowlet. Unless you're Gabe as our only listener, in which case I'm Nate. You know Nate.
I do love selling Bowlet as the podcast that has one listener. No, Gabe is what we call all of our listeners on that podcast. I'm Chris. I'm the host of both of these podcasts, but also sometimes I'm not the host of both of these podcasts because we rotate on both of them. But I'm hosting this one, and wow, just unlucky for you who have tuned into this. So let's talk about Goon. That was, I guess, technically my choice. Story of a small town bouncer who gets recruited to play hockey because they have an oft injured former hockey star who plays tentatively because he doesn't have an enforcer on his team, and so they bring in the bouncer Doug Glatt to come in and protect him.
It's a movie.
This is I've watched this movie once. I didn't rewatch it for this podcast. I did not need to. I was good. I didn't think that was a good thing for my health to do. I think, like,
is that because you think that every time that you watch the movie that Sean William Scott is actually getting punched in the head?
I think it's just, it makes me feel like I'm getting punched in the head. Like, I just think it's trying to do what Slapshot did, which is just like, let's be funny. And there's going to be a lot of like punching and stuff, and it's going to be funny. And it is, there's some good jokes in there. It did make me laugh when I watched it, but it's just like, I don't know. I think also it left a bad taste in my mouth that they made a television show a couple years later. And that was horrible. I watched two episodes. It was the worst fucking shit ever. If you like the movie, you don't watch that because it'll absolutely ruin it for you too.
What if you didn't like the movie?
Also don't watch it, I assume.
It can be even, you'll hate it even more somehow. Like, you might think it's the worst piece of cinema you've ever seen, and then wait till you watch the TV show. Which doesn't have any of the original actors, but basically the same exact characters.
Awesome.
Yeah. I didn't hate this movie. I thought it was totally fine. I would love to scrub Jude Baruchel's character out of existence from this movie. And yep,
coming
from
up.
The subsequent
spoiler for a lot of awards.
But like, I think it's a total turn your brain off, 2010s comedy. There are some funny moments, a lot of like jokes that don't land, but it it kind of is what it is for me. I didn't, you know, think too much into it. There's a lot of weird, like, either homophobia or acceptance of gay people in this movie, which I was not expecting going into it.
It's weird.
It's doing a weird two-step with that. It's never clear if they're like what the thesis is with that, or if they're totally grasping it, or it's a weird dance.
To me, it felt like they were trying to justify one by using the other.
Yeah. I think, like, other than Jay Baruchel, I think the performances are, like, totally fine. Sean William Scott's pretty good. Liev Schreiber is, like, I actually like him in this movie. I think
Liev Schreiber's great. Yeah. Oh, no, good. He's fantastic.
Allison Pill has a super thankless role, but I think she does it well. And yeah, it's a pretty good comedy, and the hockey is not as good, but not terrible in this still.
I'm gonna, like, big time kind of disagree there. I, as somebody who, like, grew up, like, just pretty much obsessing over hockey, this is one of those movies that I feel like a lot of, like, I don't know, just people would, like, I always heard of it.
You can just say me.
And no, I don't even want to say that. I just think, like, it was a movie that was thrown at me a lot, and I kind of had always resisted because I felt like it was going to be, like, a shallow movie in general, and then I watched it, and it pretty much hit all the things that I was expecting it to in terms of it being shallow. I thought there were some attempts at comedy in kind of like the Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly universe, but I don't think many of them landed. I think it was kind of trying to blend that with, like Drew said, kind of a ripoff of Slapshot, but make it just kind of like an almost like masturbatory celebration of, like, macho man hockey violence, and trying to apply that to things that, like, didn't really apply, which we'll get to a lot more next movie. But I don't know. I felt like it was, like, the things that, as a diehard hockey fan, I feel like I don't appreciate about, like, casual people looking at hockey, which, not to offend anyone here who might be a casual fan, because I, you know, gatekeeping is the last thing you want to do here, but I feel like a lot of people who run with the, like, oh, hockey is just about fighting narrative, this gives a lot of credence to that and doesn't do a particularly good job of making up for it in comedy. So, whereas Slapshot, on the other hand, is, like, glorifying that violence, but does so in a very, like, I think, well done comedic way. I feel like Goon was just kind of lacking that comedic depth or really a strong storyline to kind of back it up. But if you're looking for I will say, like, it was a kind of turn your brain off movie, and I have some other friends who are similar hockey fans and do like it. So maybe if that's the kind of movie you're going for, then I think it does sort of fit that bill.
Yeah. I mean, so I like the character of Doug Glatt, and I think Sean William Scott does a pretty good job of being, like, just kind of an adorable dumbass, who's, like, just kind of like a sweet, it's a trope for sure. Just, like, sweet dude who,
they has make these, him just, like, monster so fists.
Yeah, but, like, those people exist. It's
coming the in hot with the takes.
I like the character. I'm on board with Zach, where I think the movie's fine. So the first time I watched this, I was living with my buddy Carrie, and he used to be a bouncer at a bar. And so he kind of loved the idea of a bouncer, like, becoming a hockey player just out of the ability to fight. And watching it with that frame of mind and like that character, I enjoyed it at the time. And the second time watching it, just, like, how few jokes landed for me kind of, you know, diminished my enjoyment of the film. And the hockey's fine. I think it looks pretty good. We'll get to some of it in the game that we're going to play with Nate, but there are some things that I have issues with. But I did want to mention that I watched this with Kat Silverman, our collective dear friend, and she wanted it to be known that the depiction of goalies in this film is very accurate.
Chris, awesome. I need you to stop bringing up collective. It can't cross over.
Boy, if you guys want to see a movie about Romanian healthcare, go check out Collective.
You want to see a movie that makes me feel the same way I felt after watching Goon. My biggest thing with the two biggest takeaways for me were that I feel like I need to give Seth Rogen more credit because so this movie was written by Evan Goldberg, who is like Seth Rogen's go-to partner. I often credited him as like, oh, he must be kind of the brains behind some of that stuff because, you know, Seth Rogen's more out in front. And this didn't have Seth Rogen, and look at what happened. So I kind of feel like that's, you know, a little bit of credence there. I agree that Liev Schreiber was probably my favorite part of the movie. I thought he was really good and added like a level of humanity to the film that I wasn't really expecting or getting from other places. I also think it's worth looking at his run of films in the run-up to this, because his filmography takes something of a turn before coming back out, and when he's in Spotlight, he goes from Defiance, which was ostensibly like a pseudo prestige movie with Daniel Craig, to X-Men Origins Wolverine, Taking Woodstock, Every Day, Repo Men, Salt, and then Goon. Wow, and then he comes out of that. It's just a tough. So this was, he was in a real dip.
And he then did Movie 43.
Yeah, exactly.
When did Roy Donovan start, or Ray Donovan? What the fuck is that show?
Ray Donovan. That's a good question. I would guess it was around this time. It was 2 years after. He got into Ray Donovan 2 years afterwards, and then was in was on BoJack Horseman a little bit. Was, you know, was kind of hopping between things. So
when did he start doing the VO for Hard Knocks? Because I feel like that's when he his career really turned around.
Really, it really spiked back up. Yeah.
Honestly, nobody has a sexier voice than Liev Schreiber.
I think he's a phenomenal actor. I think he might be my favorite actor in Spotlight. I think he's unbelievable in that.
He's good. I mean, Michael Keaton Erasure, that's
not Michael Keaton Erasure. I love Michael Keaton. I think Liev Schreiber is the best actor in that movie. Gives the best performance in that movie. I agree.
Sidetrack.
Yes.
Let's argue about 2015 movie Spotlight.
Check out our Lottie's episode.
Spotlight.
If you
want
to listen to 4 hours of 2015 movies, go check out our Lottie's episode.
Yeah, this was just one of those movies that I think, as we've talked about on our podcast before, like, I think this brand of comedy, if it isn't at the sort of upper echelon of this brand of comedy, isn't really my wheelhouse for stuff. And so that, combined with some of the problematic stuff, combined with some of the just kind of like pacing that was all over the place and like the mechanics of the movie just kind of falling flat, just like, this doesn't work for me. This is not my type of thing. And I think if you change a part of that, if you have like a few more compelling performances or a better paced thing or a little bit funnier or about a sport that I'm like immediately more in the pocket of, I might have more nostalgia for it or some more sort of connection to it, because none of those things really lined up. It just, you know, was a movie, and I don't really feel any need to spend any more time with it.
No, Zach, I think it was you who had said, you know, it's kind of just that brand of comedy, like 2010s or 2010s or whatever you call that decade. I think you also mentioned, like, you know, Will Ferrell as a name, or maybe it was somebody else. It felt like a Will Ferrell movie, but Will Ferrell wasn't in it, so it wasn't good. That stereotypical yet legendary actor of that specific kind of comedy, brand of comedy, to be in it to really deliver. Chris, I know you think like the guy really delivered as the main character, and I think he did based on what that character was written to be. I wish the character was written a little better, and and also it had that star power, like that Will Ferrell behind it. Maybe I would like to see Will Ferrell do like a kicking and screaming, but it's hockey. I think that would be fucking hilarious.
So it's weird. Like, Sean William Scott is like the straight man in this movie.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's incredibly stupid. And right. It's weird. usually when a comedy is centered around a straight man, all the other people are zany, but it's really only Jay Baruchel who's zany. And he fucking
and that, yeah, terrible. That's a word for it. Sure. Yeah.
Terrible.
It's also like, I it seems almost like they knew that they couldn't make the joke that he was.
They so knew.
They knew, Bobby.
We can't go back to Spotlight.
Thank you for listening to our Spotlight podcast.
Because it plays that way, where they never go so far into the he's an idiot, right? Like, as the butt of all the jokes, which is for the best. That's like, I'm glad that we were at that point in the 2010s that they knew that that was not the move. And also, because of that, he's playing the straight man, but not a straight man with depth or a compelling thing, and also not one who's surrounded by other people. Like, there's not the variance between the characters, and there's not enough sort of like definitionally interesting shit going on with the people in the movie, again, other than Liev Schreiber, kind of, and he's just playing Sabretooth. So
yeah, I mean, like, Allison Pill isn't asked to do anything in this movie.
No,
like, it is she supposed to, like, she's just a love interest with no real characteristics other than she's into hockey players.
Yeah, she's promiscuous. That's like, yeah, her character arc.
Yeah, she's also kind of just like that character from Slapshot.
Yeah,
totally.
It's basically a facsimile.
Totally. I will say, I did kind of chuckle when he was talking about how often trash gets blown into his face.
That I mean, the scene where trash does get blown into his face, also very funny.
But yeah, weird movie.
Yeah. Not a fantastic movie.
No, that's speaking of subpar. Not a
fantastic movie.
It's a bad drama, but it's a documentary, so that doesn't matter.
Ice Guardians.
That's my defense. Ice Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, a documentary what? Film about enforcers in the NHL. Cam, want to lead us off on this one? You watched it today.
I do want to go last, as I feel like I'm going to be the only one defending. And I, as the defense, I think the prosecution needs to go first.
Are you the enforcer?
No, I am the...
I think he was going for a law metaphor.
I am the guardian of this.
I'm bringing it back.
Would law be better with this?
Are the enforcers. I am the guardian.
Consult the video for the Run the Jewels video for whatever that fucking song is. I'll cut this out.
Leave it in. Anyway, Cam, go ahead.
Oh God. First of all, that's necessary. I don't even know where to start here. I will say, if Goon is a masturbatory celebration of unnecessary hockey violence, then Ice Guardians is like the world's largest circle jerk regarding unnecessary hockey violence. It is like essentially an hour and a half long, or hour 40, whatever.
Hour 48.
Hour 48 of completely one-sided propaganda about why hockey requires unnecessary violence in order to survive. And, first of all, every single argument that was made, split up by cheesy, like, just one word or title worded, like, title cards that looked like they were made on, like, Microsoft PowerPoint in like 20 minutes.
The substitute was in
by, like, Jerome McGinley, who apparently I was very sad to see was partially behind this film. It was just, every single argument was just a complete logical fallacy. There was no, like, reasonable argument made. It was pretty much just entirely what if arguments, or just completely misguided and not based in any actual fact. I mean, it pretty much started out with people like trying to take credit for Wayne Gretzky's career and how none of these all great players would be even good at hockey if it weren't for some fucking goon who had to like end five people's life with concussions every game in order to like stay in the league. They consulted whatever is the Canadian actor as the voice of authority on this, because there's clearly not too many people who would actually be able to back this up with any statistical evidence or facts. Their line of thinking there was just like, oh, he's Canadian, he must be a voice of authority on hockey. And then it goes on to just like, again, the logical fallacies in this argument that are just like, oh, most concussions aren't even fighting. So clearly two guys just standing there beating each other to a pulp every night on a hard sheet of ice isn't that bad, while also glorifying how violent it is. Like, trying to make both of those arguments at the same time was absolutely absurd. And then they stoop so low as to just blame shoulder pads for injuries. I couldn't believe that when they were like, it's not fighting, it's shoulder pads. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And then wrapping it off with the sob story of like, oh, hockey sucks now. Everything's changed. You can't just kill people on the ice anymore. It all sucks now. It was like the unbelievable cherry on top. Like, I kind of switched my thinking halfway through this and started just like almost considering it as a mockumentary because it was just so far out of base. It looked like you see news stories that are just completely one-sided and cherry-picked and not like they try to act like they're presenting both sides because they bring in like one doctor looking guy who like kind of argues against fighting, but then somehow swings back in the direction of like arguing for it. It's just, it missed on every level. And it was just an hour 48 of just unnecessary arguments. And like, again, arguing for like the worst side of hockey that it requires just gorish violence in order to be a good sport, which is just flat out false.
It's the plandemic of hockey films.
I texted Chris and Zach. I was the last one of the three of us to watch this, so I was kind of live texting it as I was going through, and I think I distinctly remember texting at the moment when I was like, oh, I get it. The problem is the pads. Okay, cool. Good to know. Glad we could clear that up. I felt like it. I mean, it reads as propaganda film, like pretty much right out the gate. I don't have as strong, because I'm not as well versed in the sport, I don't have as strong a position in terms of the value of fighting, again, aside from NHL hits, which, you know, fucking love that shit. But like within the reality of the sport, I don't have a strong position on whether it's a valuable thing, whether it's a problematic thing, other than, you know, basic concussion protocol stuff. But I just felt like I was being gaslit watching this movie, like very aggressively. And so I pretty quickly started having an issue with that. Like it wasn't even about like, you could have tricked me into it. It would have been fine. But the second you have Jay Baruchel pop up and be like, yeah, well, like everybody has their opinion. And then these people come in and they try and bring facts into it. And they think that makes their opinion right. And then I was like, all right, fuck you, sir. Like, no. I've heard this shit in too many settings. That's not going to work. And the dude, the like psychologist who came in, who was like, well, actually, the enforcer is the most ethical and most loyal member of the tribe. I was like, what is happening?
I feel like we were real close to someone kind of just like turning directly to camera and going, yeah, you pussy.
Oh my God.
This
movie had like four Alan Combs in it. If that makes any sense to anyone.
My favorite logical fallacy was the one that Cam brought up about like 95% of concussions being non-fighting.
Idiots think this. Sliding
bar graph.
Without mentioning that not even close to 5% of the action in hockey games is fighting. So maybe if you scale that to like amount of time of fighting versus amount of time of hockey playing, and then you show me some statistics that that prove your very cherry-picked point, maybe I'll believe it. But yeah, that's pretty tough.
This movie had a bunch of like shreds of arguments that I can understand. You know, blaming pads is not right, but I do understand like pads protecting the attacking player can make them feel more at will to put their body at risk and therefore then hurt other people. Like that is a piece of an argument that I can buy into. That is not therefore we should have these big guys beat the fuck out of everyone else.
Absolutely. And shoulder pads are primarily there to keep people from breaking their shoulders when they get hit into the boards.
Yes.
Something that happens far more often than cheap shotting somebody in the head with your shoulder pads.
Yeah.
And it's something that happens like 50 times a game. And then somebody getting cheap shotted in the head with a shoulder pad happens like once every month or so.
Also, you know who also cheap shots people? The fucking enforcers.
Exactly.
Like, that is never once mentioned in this entire film.
That the people that they're there to protect is against themselves. It's the only ones they have to protect from.
It's a tragedy, really. It's just a cyclical tragedy.
How do we solve this problem?
It's the Eric Andre meme of like, I wonder who did that, you know?
Yeah. Or the hot dog. We should leave the hot dog. Yeah. We're all looking for the guy who did this. they get you too with that. We talked about this on the most recent episode of Ballot, but the role that an inconsistent soundtrack can play. And like the pseudo, like, from the climax of a Mike Mills film soundtrack that comes in over two guys just fucking battering each other in the face.
It's like, actually, this is good and fun.
I would look away for a second and like hear it and be like, oh, okay, like I, the emotion is welling up. Like I feel compelled about the narrative. And I'd look back and it'd just be the dude with the fucking chain around his hand. Yeah, it's very confusing.
So to bring this back a little bit, I would have been super intrigued by a legitimate documentary about this topic.
Yeah.
Because which do exist.
Yeah. Because I think the role of an enforcer is one of the most unique positions in American sports, where most of the other like planned violence of all the other sports has been completely phased out. And this is so atypical for a mainstream sport. And, what are the effects on the actual enforcers themselves? A lot of them are like, is it I was violent and therefore I became an enforcer, or I wanted to be a professional hockey player and therefore I know I had to be an enforcer to continue my livelihood? Those things, those questions, I was very intrigued by, and I feel like we're almost touched upon. And I think, Drew, I don't want to like speak for you, but I think that is what you might have liked the most about this, is when they actually brought up the questions that were genuinely like concerned with why enforcers exist and what happens to the players that become enforcers.
Mm-hmm. I want to jump in with a part like kind of similar to that. I think one of the things that they really hit on, which was right at the beginning for a second, was like comparing why does this happen in hockey and not in football or in rugby? Like that's a very legitimate and good question. If they had taken more time diving into that, I think at the end of the day, it would have revealed something that would have been against whole thesis statement for the documentary was, which is why they kind of skimmed over it. But like those are the type of questions that I think could be pursued in a documentary and would be really interesting.
Yeah, there's definitely a racial aspect to that as well, where basketball players don't have the privilege to be able to fight each other on the court. Like it's happened, and but it's dealt with swiftly and in a very different way than it is in hockey.
You want to watch a doc? The Palace doc just came out.
Pretty
great,
good.
Great. It ties up pretty nicely with this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to dive in a completely different direction before we throw it to Drew, the thing that I found most worrisome about this documentary very immediately is that all the interviews were taken at San Diego Gulls games at the sports arena.
I think probably just ripped off of like a local news station who was interviewing people about fighting when it was hot in the news, is my guess.
Literally every single in-person interview with somebody who is not a hockey player
That's so funny.
At a San Diego Gulls game. All right, Drew.
Just kidding. Shut the fuck up, Drew. We don't care. No.
I just tried to unmute my mic, but I was unmuted. I was muted on the call. All right. So, Chris, you'll be surprised. I made notes for this.
Oh, wow.
Like for Drew, the podcast in general.
Drew famously.
This is the first time Drew's ever made notes. Ice Guardians.
It wasn't just Ice Guardians. It was all the movies. Well, almost all the movies. So, for... I ranked them for myself. For Miracle, the note was duh. For Slapshot, there's some notes. One thing I didn't talk about was the goalie, Dennis Lemieux character, teaching me the rules of hockey.
The opening to that movie is unbelievable.
That was a transition that I would have made if we had gone straight from Miracle to Slapshot, because we were talking about accessible movies. Talk about an accessible opening scene. He teaches you all the rules of hockey.
Unbelievable.
I think Indian Horse, I had a bunch of notes. Ice Guardian, I had notes going in, and then I just made more based on what I was hearing. Goon, I had no notes. That wasn't worthy. So turning to Ice Guardians in my defense. So, yes, it takes the stance of it being very, like, you need an enforcer, you need a quote-unquote goon. I like how they dedicated so much time to, don't call it a goon.
Don't call us goons.
And I think that was a direct response to that awful movie that was made entitled Goon.
And then they put a podcast. It's a documentary. It might as well have been a podcast.
So
everything's a podcast.
So I think the enforcer role, just as, you know, you're the fighter, you're the hitter, blah, 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 that's obsolete in hockey now. There's been a huge revolution in the sport in the past few years, maybe over the course of the past decade, but it feels like the past 5 years especially has been really rapid of phasing that kind of role out of the sport, where if you don't – like, I feel like before, if you didn't have any hockey skill, you could still make a team fighting. That's not the case anymore. So, Zach, you kind of hit it for me. Like, they start those arguments. You said, like, there's shreds of an argument there. And I agree with a lot. Like, I feel like I agree with all of the arguments halfway there, where it was also made during a time – like you guys mentioned, you know, like a propaganda film. It's made during a time when fighting was really being questioned in hockey, as to where it was only fans and players being for fighting, staying in, and kind of like these outsiders and the league itself from like different standpoints, outsiders not understanding the history of it in the game and why it's there. And then the league kind of being like, oh no, this is a big fine coming our way. This is big legal fees coming our way. We need to get this out quick. I think fighting has a very, I think they point to, you know, the first indoor game having a fight in it. While it doesn't have anything to do with like another player having a dirty play, and they were literally fighting like regular people who just wanted to skate around the ice. But
guys, what the fuck, man?
And the game was taking too long, and they got mad, and it just turned into a brawl. I think that's amazing how that's translated into, oh yeah, all right, you make a dirty play, I can fight you, because we fought off the hordes.
You made a documentary about that.
There was I made a documentary about that. I did for college, for in my junior year media class. I made a 3-minute documentary about fighting in hockey, which is
the appropriate amount of time.
I don't know. I think you got to land somewhere between my length and the length of it. Like 45 minutes would have been fine.
3 minutes and 108. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 50 minutes would have been good, but I do think it does have some good points. I think the adrenaline part it is a very important reason why it's also in there. And I think, you know, like to counteract that, it's like put like speed limits on what players can skate or take the sport off skates. Like that adrenaline factor is always going to be higher than other sports. And while that maybe doesn't necessarily mean, oh, that's the perfect excuse for fighting to be in the game, it explains it very well. It explains why that's there. And just that history of it always being there is embedded in the culture of the game. And yes, they do blame it on pads, and especially to you, Cam. Talk to Sean Thornton and fuck off is my note. My note is shoulder pads, comma, talk to Sean Thornton, comma, and fuck off.
Biggest shoulder pads in the league.
Yeah, he literally played with those old school shoulder pads because he argued like, yeah, my role is hitting and this can be dangerous. It should hurt when you hit someone.
Who was the one of the Bennetts had tiny little shoulder pads, right, in the NFL?
Oh, yeah. It was not
Michael. Not Martella. Yeah, Michael Bennett had like kicker shoulder pads, and his actual shoulders would be sticking out.
I feel like his actual shoulders were enough padding.
Yeah, that's fair.
And Nate, you mentioned the psychologist and how they said like it's the most ethical person in the tribe. The enforcer is. I think it certainly like makes sense that it's the most respected, which was part of the argument. But yeah, maybe the most ethical is a little much because it's like violence, fire with fire, like, you know, which maybe isn't always the best approach. But yeah, I think there was an argument there that, you know, they're the most respected for a reason.
If we're talking about current enforcers, like Tom Wilson is not the most ethical player on the ice.
There's
a code.
And Drew, on that note, I feel like they tried to tie like
the code.
Yeah, I feel like they tried to tie it to like military heroism, like, or whatever the word is. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like oh, they're willing to risk their lives for their brothers out there, and it's like they're trying to pull like a band of brothers, like he took the bullet for his comrade type of shit. It's like, no, they're just beating people senseless on the ice. It's not some like heroic act in like the purpose of a greater good. Like if you eliminate it all, again, the only people they're protecting these star players from allegedly is from each other. So if you wipe out the position, it's not like it has to be there. And I get the argument of like. And again, I've been on the ice and fired up and done shit that I'm not proud of, but I feel like it's not that hard to create a game. And I think that the most prudent point they made was that it is the league's job to enforce it. And if the league enforced it correctly, then a lot of this would be gone. And the argument that guys are going to do it anyway is just simply not true. If you suspend somebody for half season or for a full season when they pull some dumb shit, it's going to stop because teams aren't going to waste money and roster spots on that. So the argument that it has to be policed by these big bad macho guys who are willing to sacrifice their bodies in purpose of a greater good is just a completely invalid argument.
Right. The argument that we can't police it as like the people who actually police shit is usually a bullshit argument for sustaining it. Like that in and of itself, in pretty much any medium, that is by no means limited to hockey, right? Like that's just like, well, somebody should do something about this. Like that's a, you know, we want this to keep going thing. I think the thing that like the notion of the sort of institutional respect for this position or the psychology of this person really thinking that what they're doing is for the greater good of their team, or like the way that that's constructed. Or I think what they tiptoed up on that I was really interested in and was very disappointed that it got an eighth of the time that they spent on that fucking 95.5 graphics slide was the like, it might've been Kevin Westergaard talking about like the I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't have like an attraction to violence as a thing. Like that was a really interesting moment that was totally. Like, yeah, great. I'm not like, I'm so interested in talking about that and talking about how that bleeds over into your life outside. It talking about like why those people are so respected in those circles within the game and why their teammates really respect them and what the psychology is of going on. And that doesn't even need to be from a purely like a condemnation of the thing. Like, I think you could do that in a way that, as the best documentaries do, maybe makes its case, but makes its case with like a depth to it, and not just yes, some people have mentioned CTE, but like let's redirect, you know, like that. That's what threw me out of it. I think that there were so many moments that it either tiptoed up to the edge of the point, or it went past it, and it was like, you're there, and we keep going, and we keep going, and then we kind of lost where it was. And that was like, but the core themes that came up, I thought were really interesting.
Yeah, so my favorite hockey fight that I will watch occasionally is former Bruins defenseman Adam McQuaid fighting Rafi Torres, I think at that time of the Arizona Coyotes. Basically, the play that takes place is that Rafi Torres, a forward for the Coyotes, goes into the corner while Bruins defenseman Adam Ferentz fishes the puck out of the corner. And he goes in and he like very clearly like sets himself up for like a hard turn straight into his head with his shoulder pad. And like as soon as that happens, Adam McQuaid rushes across the ice, just absolutely slams Rafi Torres into the boards, They both drop their gloves, and Adam McQuaid just beats the absolute shit out of Rafi Torres. The reason why this is my favorite is because Rafi Torres is a notorious piece of shit who can't do anything in hockey except cheap shots. Like, he wasn't even like a notoriously good fighter. He was never a scorer. He was just a guy who was a very dirty player who was dangerous on the ice and made other teams uncomfortable. And removing that role from the game is a way to prevent the necessity for fighting. So my favorite NHL fight could have not existed if players like Rafi Torres didn't exist. So there are these just false premises throughout this entire documentary that just kind of support the reason for something that doesn't need to exist.
I also thought they didn't even delve deep enough into the human interest part of it. They had all this access to these incredible old hockey players and like what motivated them. And it just felt like kind of rote interviews. You know, it ended on this incredible quote. I forget what it was. Is like, if you regret it, would you do it again? Like, basically all of them said, yeah, absolutely. And the last guy got like super choked up. I forget who it was. He goes, yeah, I think with a little bit more fire, you know, yeah. And like, it's a really great quote. And it kind of goes to his mindset. And I was kind of disappointed by the fact that they had all this access and they just didn't do shit with it.
It's an hour 48 documentary. That's just like a bunch of like random bullshit. And then like ends with this really emotional moment that is not set up at all.
Yeah.
It's very jarring.
Yeah, I think in terms of the argument that it shouldn't be needed, because the argument is it's needed because of all those cheap shots that happen. I think, like I had been saying, like this documentary came out at a time where it was really, or I suppose it was made, it came out in 2016, but you know, you assume it was being made, you know, 2014, 2015.
Yeah, it was being made for at least 2 weeks before that.
So I think that
you go to all those San Diego games.
Yeah,
it felt like desperation on behalf of people who were like, no, fighting is actually playing a role in the game. Like, hey, no, we gotta get this out. Like, we get like there are like some necessities there, and I think there are necessities because the league isn't doing things like suspending players for half the season when a clear cheap shot occurs, where I understand you can't like enforce intent, but you can kind of see there's intent in the action there to hit a guy from behind or injure someone.
This will come up in the game that we're about to play with Nate, but there's a certain person who has a certain amount of power that he's not enacting. Let's just say that.
I just think that it goes back to kind of what you said, Zach, with my liking of this film, where it's like I'm halfway there on all of the arguments, basically. Like, I understand where they're coming from, and I think they do hit the nail on the head in some aspects. I then think they go a little bit over the top, and it becomes focused around these players who can't play hockey should still be able to play hockey because, like, blah, blah, blah. I think it should be more like, yo, this is why fighting is in the game. And I think it's understandable why it is there. I think they do a good point in showing that.
Indoctrinated me.
But in terms of it, like gaslighting, like I can see that because it goes over the top and is like, yo, it needs to be a part of the game.
Yeah, you little fucking wuss. This is why this needs to be part of the game.
I think a good point they made too was like players want it in the game, and my ultimate opinion in anything that doesn't directly affect me is whoever it directly affects most should have the say in what we do with it. And if 90%+ of the players are like, I feel like this should be in the game, then you're the ones playing it and you're the ones putting that risk.
Also,
like,
I think that's kind of the premise because, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, arguing that fighting can exist in hockey is not the same as arguing that there needs to be a role for these enforcers. Like, I agree that there are some fights, and I think a situation like Chris brought up earlier where, like, I've been on the ice where somebody runs my goalie, and you know what I mean? I'm not going to, like, argue that that's a giveaway to, like, you know, a free ticket to beat somebody's face in, but I understand the passion, and especially at those speeds, like things we talked about earlier, where it's more likely to boil over, and I think there are acceptable uses of fighting, but I think, you know, there's a separate argument to be made there versus the role of enforcers whose sole purpose is to just fucking beat people, and that they somehow deserve a spot and are owed a spot in the league, rather than having to earn it like everybody else who's actually good at hockey.
I just want to say that's part of the reason I'm partway there, is I don't think that needs to be a role where you're just beating people up, but I do think still it has its place in the game for a reason.
I also just have a problem with the, like, hockey players say enforcers should be there, so that enforcers should be there, because I mean, especially going through all the, like, COVID bullshit, like, hockey players don't know what's best for them. It's a bunch of, like, people with high school educations who know nothing more than, like, being indoctrinated into this toxic hockey culture,
right?
So
I think that's giving a little autonomy away from the players themselves. Like,
so that's why there's a players association and everything. Like, this exists. There is a venue.
I don't think we can sit there and say, I can't sit here and say I know better than hockey players. You know?
Oh, no, sure. But I think conversely, you can't just say if you've never been in a locker room, you 100%
agree.
Right.
100% agree.
Yeah, the media section of the documentary trying to say that, like, people who watch hockey, like,
news, bro,
every day of their lives for their profession don't understand the game because they've never been on the ice. Like, that's also another false premise.
I think
the whole European argument too, where it's like guys who are over there say it's way dirtier. It's like, well, you just cherry picked a couple people who said that. Like, that's just not North American hockey is so much more violent than European hockey. Let's just.
I do think those hits do actually happen more, but I wish maybe they don't if they didn't take the time to dive into it and really find, like, concrete sources on that. But I have a feeling, like, if there are, then that's a very, very solid argument. Like, if there are statistics out there that show, hey, there are more of these kind of hits,
I'm gonna say, prove it
in
then.
These leagues. Exactly. Like, I would like to see it.
It can be verified. You know, like, go and say how many suspendable hits, how many hits have caused injuries. Like,
this isn't like Corsi, though. This is like, you gotta, like, what is suspendable? And if you ask the NHL, almost nothing. But that's the thing. The league, my argument is always that the league needs to suspend harder, and then these will happen less, and then fighting will.
But I'm saying, like, if you're talking about Euro leagues, and the idea is that the Euro leagues are more against fighting and more against, like, hitting, then they should suspend more for hits. I feel like there's a logical line of thought there.
Yeah,
I like the International Hockey Federation's rule on that, which is where whenever there is an incident of. Like,
they go to the Hague
with the head being if there's ever an instance with the head being the main point of contact in a hit, it's automatically a penalty, whether or not it was an accident, and then they go from there and it gets much more serious with suspensions. I that's where I want the NHL to be on it, but I don't think they'll get there because who they have judging these things.
Yes.
Are okay, those enforcers.
Good transition, because we're going to play a game with Nate.
Hold on. I want to do two.
You fucking asshole.
You fucking piece of shit. I'm listening to the fucking song.
My last two things are, I think it's really difficult because there isn't a clear solution to this, and it's going to have to be worked on, and it's going to take a lot of iterations, and it's not going to be perfect, and it's going to piss a lot of people off. And the people that are pissed off in this documentary are the ones that are making it, and that's why they made this documentary. The second thing is, that's not a really good reason to make a documentary. You can't go into something with this thesis already there, for a what is purported as an investigative piece on the enforcer role in hockey. I would have loved that documentary. That's not what we got. We got someone coming in with a mindset trying to prove something through this documentary. And that's where I feel like ultimately that is the core issue that poisons every part of this documentary for me.
All right. I'm texting Cam because Cam is dying right now. that we're getting into the awards.
The Bruins and Birds podcast is sponsored by DraftKings. Hockey is back, and DraftKings Sportsbook has an unbelievable offer to celebrate the greatest sport on ice. New customers can bet just $1 on any hockey game and win hundreds of dollars in free bets if either team scores a goal. It doesn't matter if it's a one-time clapper or a deft deflection. However they light the lamp, you win. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN. Throw down $1 on any hockey game and win 100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. This week, one puck in the net bets you a big win with promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey and Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wage required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right. Right before this, though, we're going to play a little game with Nate. Nate, famously the least hockey person on the podcast. So we're going to play a game that kind of harkens back to an old game that we used to play on Ballot called Gaps in Knowledge Game. But this is called Good Hockey or Bad Hockey, where Nate has to determine if something that happened in one of these movies is good hockey or bad hockey.
I will say, and just to give credit where credit's due, that the inception of this game comes from a game that I play with my wife, Ivy, who is a therapist, called Good Therapy or Bad Therapy, where whenever we see therapy in a film or TV show, I turn to her and I go, good therapy or bad therapy? And so, sometimes she responds with, it's good or bad, and sometimes she responds, what? Because I'm just asking out of the blue in the middle of a TV show. So... So yes, yeah, so that's what this comes
from. In this game, good hockey could refer to hockey that is being portrayed well on film, hockey that would happen in real life. It's a little fluid, but for the most part, I think you'll catch on. We'll start with the good transition here. George Parros being in Ice Guardians, the guy with the
Fu Manchu mustache.
George Parros, good hockey or bad hockey?
The handlebar mustache feels like a strong lean towards good. You asking it feels like a trap question, so I'm saying bad hockey.
Bad hockey. George Parros is the head of the Department of Player Safety.
Who we complained about the suspension.
Yeah. He's the one who has the final word on suspensions.
So when he says somebody should do something about this,
yeah, he's the hot dog.
I have one just to jump in. Sean Thornton, good hockey or bad hockey?
Oh, don't even know who that is.
So guess.
Bad hockey.
Oh, no, he's good hockey. He was one of the good enforcers.
God damn it.
Yes, he was one of the good guys, Chris. He bled black and gold. Shut the fuck up. Sean Thornton, legend.
Famously punched Brooks Orpik while he was on the ice with a gloved hand. Good hockey.
Yes, and also fighting Matt Cook after no one fought him.
When he Sabarca did some good things. He did some bad things.
Yeah, it's a washout. Right.
Complex hockey.
In Indian hockey, Horse. Yes. Nuanced hockey. In Indian Horse, Saul hangs his shoes from the crossbar in order to practice. Good hockey or bad hockey?
So that reminds me of one of the few things I know about hockey, which, not because I think it's actually the same thing, but because crossbar reminds me of. So I'm going to say it's related to triple D glove side, and I'm going to say good hockey.
So it is good hockey. Yeah, you want to pick the corners. So he was using that for good practice. That's good stuff. Spin moves, good hockey or bad hockey?
They look cool. I don't think they're good hockey.
Correct. Bad hockey.
Great.
For some reason, in all of these movies, it has people doing spin moves, well, that... and then maintaining possession of the puck. I would say, like, the most common use of a spin move in real hockey is to, like, spin off of a hit, and usually it's after you've passed the puck. So
it's I'm gonna butt in here and say mostly bad hockey, but there are situations where spin moves haven't pulled off, and it's sick. But it's
they're dope as hell.
I'm gonna say very, like, very rare good hockey, like, and certainly exaggerated.
I think
it's not impossible. It does happen, but it's it's a extremely high skill move that is grossly over exaggerated in film for
they use it in the film in like the most inappropriate ways and also unrealistic, because realistically
the defense would kind of stop there.
Momentum going forward. Like, it's not like you can cut and then continue that full speed going in that direction and still beat both defensemen and a forward who's back checking. Like, if you do a spin move, you're past that one guy, and then you got three more on you. Like, you're still in a shit situation after it never works.
Well, and you have no speed left, so you're just where
it actually works. So.
Based on my understanding of Indian Horse, it's a superpower, and if you spin move, you immediately like
beat racism. You've seen it turn around before.
Yeah, if I know anything about hockey, it's you want to turn your back to your opponent as much as possible.
It's like basketball. You got to box them out, you know, like slowly as you get towards the net. Yeah, exactly.
All right, stacking the pads. This is when a goalie will kind of slide and put their pads like on top of each other to block a shot. Good hockey or bad hockey?
I'm saying bad hockey because I feel like it limits you to only blocking in one area, and then someone, had they been practicing with their skates in the corners, could aim somewhere else.
Yeah, so I agree with your assessment. I will give you a point there. I would have given you a point if you had said either good or bad hockey, because in Miracle, where it's portrayed, that would have been how they did that. In Indian Horse, Saul scores the game winner in his first game with the Moose. He goes 5-hole. The goalie's late getting into the butterfly. Good hockey or bad hockey by that goalie?
I understood 7 of the words you just said. We're going with good
and
hockey.
Most of them were butterfly.
Yeah. Okay. I would have accepted either also for the same reason, but in 1960, a goalie going into the butterfly, not a thing. That goalie would have been stacking the pads. That was not invented yet.
Correct. He would have been standing and kind of flailing in some direction.
You're walking
across the street and you see a car coming and you like pretend to fast walk across the street. That's exactly what goalies did back then when the puck was low.
For the purposes of this podcast, it's bad hockey. Foil on your knuckles. Good hockey or bad hockey?
Great hockey. Great, you gotta foil you gotta put on the foil
before every game. Correct.
Yeah.
calling the goaltender's wife gay slurs.
Bad hockey. Bad form writ large. I would present the hot take that I'm opposed to calling anyone gay slurs.
Correct. Actually suspendable in the NHL.
Great.
I think since 2017.
I was going to say,
way too recently.
Just a few years after Helmets.
Well, you know what? Ice Guardians came out, and I think we know, like, you know, unintended changes it had on the game.
Let's go with exercise as a punishment. Good hockey or bad hockey?
Well, the thing is, I'm old school, and so we were just built different back then. So, good hockey.
Yes.
Good hockey if you're playing Russians, because as we learned from Rocky IV and its 19 montages, the only way you're going to beat the Russians is by exercise.
I was going to say, as we learned from Remember the Titans, hockey's for quitters. So, or hockey's for quitters. Water's for quitters.
That's open.
Hockey is for quitters. And that is the thesis statement of this. Thank you for listening to this podcast. And then I guess for the last one, submarine hits. The hits where a player kind of ducks down and hits players on their thighs. Good hockey or bad hockey?
Really think about this one, Nate. Really think about this.
Are we saying effective hockey or good, like good morally speaking?
We're saying
good. That is up to you.
The game hasn't changed. It's been the same game the whole time.
Effective or ineffective, good or bad?
I feel like I came out so hard against Ice Guardians that I have to say bad hockey on this.
It is bad hockey. It is very illegal. Happens in, I think, every one of these movies and is not called as a penalty. And would be something that immediately gets you hit by an Ice Guardian.
Except if you're Brad Marchand, where you'll submarine someone and then submarine the guy who comes and hits you after.
Thank you for playing good hockey or bad hockey. Nate, you scored 1,300. You have time to add to your point total. That was 1,300. Go ahead.
What was it like? Buffalo turd as ice hockey puck.
I was going to say good hockey because I draw the equivalence between that to like people dribbling on, and like shooting on a backboard that's dented. You learn with what you got and you
throw out the horse hockey.
Was it buffalo or cow or horse or?
I think it was horse. It was horse turd. Yeah, it was something that was heavier than a puck. He made the point that
frozen horse shit.
It was quite the turd. It was a large animal.
Yeah, Nate. Good hockey, bad hockey. Blocking multiple point blank slap shots with your face.
Good hockey because you got to get the job done.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. Nate, you scored 1,302 points.
Hell yeah. I'm curious in what the grading was to get those last two for 2 points.
The passing score was 1,250. Congratulations, you've passed good hockey or bad hockey. Now to get into our final segment, the awards. On Bowlit, we always hand out awards at the end of our podcasts and hand them to the person in each film who most embodies each of these, and I'll kind of explain them as we go along. So we'll start with the Rebecca Pidgeon Award for the worst accent work in any of these films. Cam, why don't you lead us off?
Oh man, you may have to come back to me on that one. I'm not having too much that stick out.
Assume that you had this written down. Nate, go ahead.
Have it written down. No.
So I need to caveat this by saying that this performance I think is brilliant. Dearly love this movie. Love this performance in it, and Kurt Russell in Miracle, specifically in the speech in the locker room where he goes, "Great moments are born from great opportunity." And that's what you have here tonight, boys. And just flips a gear with that accent.
He goes into Chicago from Minnesota. Yeah.
An Irishman in Chicago in 1912.
All right, Drew, do you have one for this?
No, but I'm trying to think of one on the spot. All
right, Zach, go ahead.
It's also Kurt Russell. It's good until it's bad.
I disagree. I think he's really good in this movie, and I think his accent is mostly good. I think one of the things is like spending time listening to hockey podcasts and people who actually sound like that. Like, that's a real thing. It's like he's not doing a caricature. It really fucking sounds like that. I don't think it's as bad as you guys think it is. What is really bad is Jay Baruchel trying to do a Boston accent.
My number two. Yeah.
No, I have Jay Baruchel for other awards.
Oh, hey, he's not exempt from other awards just because he won this one. Drew, you ready?
Four. Worst.
Worst accent work. I mean, you can piggyback on this.
Oh, I was hoping we skip by that.
We can skip it. I don't care. Good.
So how about this? We go through our awards, and if you have one that you really want to chime in.
There's many that I do have ideas for. That one, all I could think of was the goalie and slap shot, and he did a good job. Like, in my
opinion. I mean, he was an actual like French Canadian.
Exactly. Like, he did amazing. Like, it was almost as if he was French. Canadian. Like, wow. He should be the one that's like just the best actor.
So this one is a favorite of mine, the James Woods Piece of Shit Award, given out to the biggest piece of shit in our round.
Can I start?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have the Residential School System of Canada.
Yep, that's mine as well.
I had a subsidiary of that, which was Hot Dario. So, yeah.
I think it's specifically the sister or the lady.
Oh yeah.
Because Like, I'm agnostic. Somewhere, I'm hovering somewhere between. It took me a second. I'm sorry. Wow. That, yeah, that's exactly why. I rest my case. No, I think it. Not to go down like this rabbit hole, but I'm somewhere between atheist and agnostic, and I don't like, you know, shitting on religions or anything. Like, you know, you believe what you believe, like that you have the freedom to do that. That's fine. But like, that's the kind of person that makes me want to shit on that religion. not that any of them are like good, but like, that's totally the stereotypical thing that makes like that would trigger me to be like, fuck off with that bullshit. But yeah, no, a total agreement. Also worth noting, that was not just Canada. There was some of that in Northern United States as a part of like the culture being kind of like just crossing the border, but it was mostly Canada. Canada.
Right. And also like many iterations of assimilationist government policy. Yeah. Like, of course. Lots of manifestations of that.
Yeah, definitely.
Fuck you, Canada.
Guess who treated their natives.
We really nailed our handling of the First Nations.
Cam, you got anything to add?
Nothing groundbreaking, honestly. I think you guys kind of, there's a pretty obvious winner here. So one of the few times that Canada's taken a big fat L.
Yeah. The other one I had was the editor of Ice Guardians.
Just everyone in Ice Guardians, honestly.
Bobby Hull, definitely a real piece of shit. Oh,
yeah. Is that the swastika guy?
That's
Hitler had some good ideas. He just went too far.
He definitely, and then he tried to, he had a very bad attempt to walk that back.
I have a nominee for Ice Guardian, but I'll save it for one of these other awards that I've pulled up in our text group.
All right, cool.
This is my only preparation for this segment.
Did Drew being prepared for something at all is something I wasn't expecting.
So. Yeah, no, it was a slow day at work today.
So let's go to the Bob Odenkirk Award, so named for Bob Odenkirk, who showed up very late in a couple of our favorite films. And basically it's for an actor or person in my case who showed up kind of late in a movie that I wasn't necessarily expecting to see, and I went, oh, look, it's this person. And for me, that was Nick Ritchie, aka Big Fudge in Ice Guardians, a former Bruins player who's just kind of in the background in one of those things. Otherwise, I didn't have a whole lot there.
I think I don't know the actor's name at all, but the coach of the like the Toronto team towards the end of Indian Horse, he plays a character in The Walking Dead, which is why I really recognized him, and I didn't know. He plays the governor in the Walking Dead, and I didn't realize.
Is it what, like, Martin Donovan?
Yeah,
I didn't realize what I recognized him from when I first saw it, but I was like, "That's a guy. That's totally a guy." And I had that one award in mind, and like just like knew that's who I was going to nominate. I don't know his name still, so maybe he's not very notable, but
famously of Tenet.
No, it's not Martin Donovan, but that is a good one. No, Martin Donovan, is a guy, but what is that name?
I'm sure that's a person somewhere in the world.
Martin Donovan exists.
This is a good one, though, Drew.
Hell yeah. I feel proud. I feel like I'm not a movie guy, so like...
It's a good
point. I made my impact. Also, by nominating Ice Guardians, I think I made quite the impact. Yeah.
I mean, it's the movie we talked about the most by a pretty significant margin, I think.
Yeah.
Cam has exited, so if you don't hear his voice for a while, it'll be like normal. Cam is rarely here.
Shots at Cam?
Zach, do you want to give us your Odenkirk?
I actually didn't have one this round. Okay. No one popped out super late for me that I recognized. I'm sure if I was more well versed in hockey like you both were, I could have picked someone out who's
out a player
segment got spliced in at like the 85 minute mark.
Well, so Nick Ritchie's kind of like 2 years ago he was like our punching bag, where it seemed like a bad signing. And then last year he came out and like played the first half of the season really well. And then we had a whole episode where we read our mean tweets about Nick Ritchie and apologized to him. And he's just like a very funny looking and funny human being.
We did make fun of how he looked, which is I felt very bad about. Yeah, and I think but, I did most of that.
But seeing him in the San Diego Gulls locker room in one of the random ass scenes was pretty funny for me. Nate, do you have an Odenkirk?
I also didn't really have an Odenkirk. I think Martin Donovan is a good pull for that, but I didn't really have.
Did we determine that it was Martin?
Wasn't it not Martin Donovan?
It's not Martin. No. So Martin Donovan is in it and is a good Odenkirk. I don't know that that's who you were talking about, but he is in that.
The coach of the Toronto team, where he's like, "Come into my house, look at all these pictures of my great success."
Oh yeah, that is Martin Donovan. Yeah.
Okay, that's the kind of creepy but like decent but also awful character in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
All the bases. It was great. Yeah,
there is something I forgot to mention about Indian Horse. Is that the fear of the number 13 is more of a plot device than I was expecting.
Very weird.
It's a strange, strange movie.
That's great, because that really tripped me up. He's like, the guy's like, "Oh, I got it, gave you a 13 because it's good luck." And I was like, no.
All right, so we have our Frank Booth Very Chill Guy Award, renamed on our last episode for the character Frank Booth from Blue Velvet, who famously calls everybody a fucking piece of shit and tells them not to look at him.
Don't you fucking look at me.
Don't fucking look at me, piece of shit. Zach, I have a feeling I know who your Frank Booth is, and it's probably mine as well.
It Scott Parker?
It is Scott Parker, the guy who punches trees with chains on his fists.
The other guy, and I forgot who it was like, "Yeah, if I wasn't playing hockey, I'd probably be just beating the shit out of random people." that was the other guy that really tipped the scale for me. I have no idea who that was. Was like, ooh.
I will say
that's not great.
The argument in Scott's defense, which we found out recently, was that he's now transitioned into being very into sort of the like legalized cannabis as a thing. So he's mellowed out. So
maybe
I don't know.
Very chill.
I don't know. He may be a very chill guy. I had to go with Jay Baruchel in this, in both of his appearances, but specifically in his Goon appearance, because boy, is that guy chill.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever lost more respect for a person in a ballot round than Jay Baruchel.
Yeah,
and it wasn't high to start with, let me tell you.
So the last Jay Baruchel movie I watched was pretty recently. I watched This Is the End, and I think he's pretty good at that, like in that playing himself, like a version of himself. But like learning that the version of himself that he plays in that movie is basically himself and not a caricature of himself is pretty tough.
He thought those were just extended Ice Guardian scenes.
Yeah. Cam, do you have a Frank Booth Very Chill Guy Award winner?
Maybe like what's the name of the big bad guy from Goon? I think he was potentially on there. His sole purpose was just to fucking murder people.
Schreiber, yeah.
Oh no!
His dad,
Ross Rea,
the president or general manager, whatever the fuck of the team, who was just a massive piece of shit, definitely was qualifying at least on that one.
Very chill, Drew. You got one?
Yeah, mine is the social media guy for the Ice Guardian Twitter account. So I think this is a very chill guy because their Twitter account is very modest. Like it is kind of like our Brews and Bruins account, where it's like we kind of give a shit but we don't, and it's at the point now that it's been around, like this is our like Twitter account like 4 years down the line, because now it's the documentary's been out long enough that like it doesn't get too much attention anymore. But basically that account will retweet literally they'll retweet any time someone mentions the podcast in a positive light. Like, even if you don't at them, you can just say like hashtag Ice Guardians or just Ice Guardians. So they're very chill, and like that's the only function of the account besides being like, yo, we're back on Netflix in Canada or like some shit.
Dude, a bot?
Shouts to Drew.
It's not a bot. I don't think it's a bot. I really don't, because it's not instantly. It's like a few hours later.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a bot.
I think it's like the one of the editors, and they're just like, you know, like clinging to this success.
Dude, this is incredible.
One of the first tweets from, this is from September 20th, and this is a retweet that they did of Macdi Adeo, who said, a bit behind, but just watched Ice Guardians. Very much like Goon, it really does give you a completely different perspective on the life of an enforcer. Really incredible stuff.
Wait. Keep
they
reading.
Retweeted me before.
Plus, you get to see Canadian treasure J. Baruchel. Highly recommend. Haven't seen Goon? Go, period. Watch, period. Now, exclamation point.
Oh my God.
See, those are the kind of people that they retweet plus me. There's a couple where I tweeted about it and they did retweet me.
I appreciate the work that Zach did going and making a fake account so that he could tweet that so that I would find it.
This guy, his name is Mac D. Adio. So Mac Daddio.
Jesus.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't even catch that.
Oh, my God. All right. Moving on before Nate dies. Let's do the Lakeith Stanfield Award. It's just going to be us three Bowlet guys, because there is a Lakeith in here, and it's
Paul Newman.
Well, it's Jay Baruchel for the round, yes, but excluding Drew and Cam from it. Basically, this award is given to a person who appears in multiple episodes of our podcast, usually not the star of the film if we can avoid it. But Nate, who'd you have?
My guy, M. Emmett Walsh.
Yeah, that's mine as well.
Yep.
Blood Simple.
Yeah. I just picked Paul Newman because he was in too many things. I know he's the lead in this, but he's been in so many of our recent movies that, you know,
so I had to do it. I said if Nate chose M. Emmett Walsh, I was going to go George Roy Scott,
the director
of three recent ballot films.
I do have something to contribute to this because
you said
characters that come up multiple times in our podcast. And hello, Nick Ritchie.
Hey, that is...
He has come up multiple times in our podcast, our other podcast.
Yep. Good contribution, Drew.
Thank you. I try. I'm trying to make up for Cam here because I feel very bad that he has
Cam's having
a lot of internet troubles. He is... This is so... If you live in Maine, you'll understand, or in the area, Spectrum.
Cam's technical issues aren't that bad other than he can't have his video going and he can hear all of us except for Nate.
The way God intended.
The next would be the Dutch Boy Award for the worst plot device.
Cam, give Cam a chance.
So named after the Dutch Boy device in Geostorm that prevents geostorms. Cam, what do you got here?
Just literally anything that was used to justify fighting in pretty much any of these movies. Was just a very lazy plot device.
Mine was false premises.
Yeah, pretty much just false premises through and through. Especially when you dub those over on Microsoft PowerPoint slides, they make it even worse. But scratching fear across the screen doesn't really quite do it for me as far as intellectual filmmaking goes.
Good stuff.
I had the same building off the same thing. It was that the pseudoscience that led that one psychology guy to say things like the enforcer is the most ethical member of the tribe, et cetera.
I have two that kind of dovetail against each other. I have one that is someone doesn't want to sleep with Paul Newman. And the other that is someone actually does want to sleep with Sean William Scott.
Sean William Scott's character.
Yeah,
I could see people wanting to sleep the shot.
Doug the Thug.
Coming up. Drew, do you have a Dutch Boy Award?
As I recall, there were no Dutch in this, in any of these movies. at least any Dutch boys, anyway. Maybe there were some Dutch girls, but
no, there were no women in any of these
movies. No, just like representation of women in hockey movies tends to be very poor.
Yeah, shout out to what? Who's the wife in Miracle? Patricia Clarkson.
Patricia Clarkson, yeah.
Lovely actress, has literally nothing to work with in that entire movie.
Yeah, that's pretty tough. She exists solely to give some sort of like drama to.
Is this our first episode life. That doesn't? Is this our first episode that doesn't pass the Bechdel test?
Yeah, I think it is.
We should have worked in D2 the Mighty Ducks. Could have gotten Julie the Cat Gaffney.
Classic. Could have gotten
Connie Moreau.
One of the best movies in the hockey canon that in representing women.
I mean, still doesn't pass the Bechdel.
Oh, no. Julie the Cat Gaffney doesn't get in the game until the fucking shootout.
Yeah.
Good hockey or bad hockey?
It's all bad hockey in that movie. And then our last award is the Dom Cobb Award for worst name, so named after the Leonardo DiCaprio character.
Worst is maybe a false like it's not quite worst. It's
least most, human.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Least human. That's different.
Yeah, well, we go I worst an answer is for this,
but now it's got, least human. Yes, you can't. I mean, I almost said Cam because I'm used to Cam fucking shit up, but Chris gave me the wrong definition. So I
feel like we usually don't define it as least human, but that is a better way to describe it.
Chris, yeah. You sabotaged me. So
the three examples that we usually give of this are Dom Cobb, Mall Cobb from the same movie, and Harge Aird from the movie Carol.
Well, you're also forgetting Paul Blart. That we kind of Mall moved Cobb. Into
Paul Blart Mall Cobb. Mall Cobb.
Yeah, Drew, do you have a Dom Cobb award winner?
Well, damn it. For worst name, I was going to say Saul because I get the premise of them naming him Saul. Like, it's supposed to be like a Christian name or whatever. But like, name. Saul, like, really, that's what you're going with? Like, I feel like. Either go with like the basic James or something like that. Like maybe they're basing it off the book, but like it just constantly reminded me of Better Call Saul. Just constantly. Like that's the only. So I hated that was the like Christian name or Catholic name or whatever that they went with. I was hoping it would be basic or just like, basic.
Yeah.
I think I was either on deck to be a Saul or a Seth, and I'm really glad that my mom changed course on that because not what I would have been psyched about.
Mine is Xavier Laflamme.
Yep, correct.
As the hot shot player in Goon. Who also I think could have done the Rebecca Pigeon. I know he's supposed to be French Canadian, but it just still sounded like a bad French Canadian.
I
think
down,
he is French Canadian.
I had him down and then I looked it up and he's French Canadian.
He did sound wrong.
Really bad. I think he's just probably a bad actor.
I don't think he's been in anything else.
Suitable for a movie like Good.
Cam, do you have a Dom Cobb for worst least human name? Nope.
Cam right. Hasbrook is
let's go name. With Nate then.
In Slapshot, number 31 on the team is named LeBrun.
That's it.
LeBrun. And I thought that was very funny. So
there's a pretty famous hockey writer named Pierre LeBrun.
It's probably French, it probably makes sense, but to me, it sounded like someone spelled LeBron wrong, and I thought that was great.
No, I think I was thinking LeBurn wrong, but that makes sense. LeBron cool. Makes way more sense. I don't know why I was going with LeBurn.
Mine is the closest thing you can possibly get to Dom Cobb without being Dom Cobb, and it's Doug Glatt.
Yeah.
It's a Doug pretty Blatt good
Mall Cobb.
It's a pretty good Dom Cobb.
Ogie Oglethorpe would have also
been as well. I stayed away from that because I thought someone was going to go for it.
Yeah, I was going to mention that as an honorable mention.
Suzanne Hanrahan. It's a lot of Anra.
Suzanne Rahan. Cam, I believe, is still dead.
It would have been Ogie Oglethorpe.
There you go.
Yeah. There's also Dave Killer Carlson in Slapshot.
Yeah, he changes his name to Killer midway.
George Parros.
All right. Well, now we can go to our F. Gary Gray, so named for the director of several movies, F. Gary Gray. It's kind of our fuck, marry, kill of the movies that we just watched. And also, sometimes you can enact the law-abiding citizen clause, which is shoot this into the sun. And I think some of us might be enacting that. Let's start with Cam and see if he has anything written down for this. Cam, you got anything for this? All right, Nate, you go ahead.
All right.
You just cut out for like half of that. So just
Cam's just like very behind, I think. I don't think like.
Okay. Yeah. Cam, go ahead. I think we're doing too much waiting for Cam.
All right, Nate, go ahead.
All right. My F is Slapshot. Fun. Liked it. It was great. My Gary is Miracle. Would watch that movie always and forever. My Gray is Indian Horse. That could have been great. I mean, could have been well done. Was not. My law-abiding citizen is the propaganda film formerly known as Ice Guardians.
Yeah, mine's the same. We don't need to go over mine. Zach, do you have anything different?
Ever so slightly. My F is Slapshot. My Gary is Miracle. My Gray is Goon. And then my law-abiding citizen is Ice Guardians.
Yep. True.
Movie enjoyed most... movie you enjoyed once, but I'm reading your text, but don't need to revisit it. It's also in night mode, so it's hard.
Which movie would you have sex with, Drew? If you said Indian Horse, we're having...
I was down for... Third base with Ice Guardians. I think that's an accurate representation of what I liked about the movie. I think Indian Horse, because there were, like I had said, like I was down with what they were trying to do with it. Mm-hmm. And I think they did highlight it more than like my common knowledge was of it. Like I knew that kind of thing happened, especially because it came up like recently, but. So I did gain some knowledge due to it, but I really wish it was one of those movies that was like, I need to watch that again and I'll like appreciate it more. Like there really isn't any more to it that I need to watch. Sure. So I think that'll go for that movie. I'll go back to tie between Miracle and Slapshot. I'll watch those all day. Movie I'm okay never watching again is definitely Goon. I wish I didn't see it a first time. But also Ice Guardians, because I said it's like too long. Like I've seen it a couple times, and one of those was like showing some members of my family, like my cousins and uncles were all big hockey fans. And after an hour, I was like, wait, it's this long? Like, holy shit, are they gonna like... I felt like embarrassed that I was like, oh my god, they have to sit through more of this. It keeps going.
Dude, it's like when you show someone a YouTube video that you think is like 20 seconds. You're so
psyched about it, yeah.
And no, wait, I promise. It gets
95.5.
Wait a second, it does get good. It gets better, I promise.
If Cam has anything to add, he can speak now.
Or forever hold your peace.
I'll probably watch Miracle on a daily basis to the day I die, so that's definitely the one I'm rewatching. Goon is probably the one I don't need to ever see again. I've seen it a couple times now, and it's not doing anything new for me. And Ice Guardians, I just eat that shit into the sun. It's garbage.
Yeah. All right. This has been.
I'm glad you loved my recommendation. I really appreciate
so
it.
I do appreciate your
that is a nice dynamic podcast, I'll say.
I think
it was good conversation.
Let it be known that I didn't even know if documentaries qualified. So I had to ask Chris, and then Chris was like, it's encouraged. And I was like, oh my God, this is perfect. I'm bringing something new to the lineup. And then it just gets shat on. That's okay. It's because Miracle and Slapshot were taken. I was really hoping I could pick Slapshot, but sorry, I cannot take
that. Yeah, sorry for sneaking Indian Horse from you. I knew
that. You're like, oh my God, guys, this movie's on Netflix. Have you ever heard of it? I think it's a Netflix original, and it just came out, was how it was advertised to me. But no.
All right. Well, this 2.5 hour episode. Did you just tell me to hold on?
Yeah, I just want to know if Nate learned anything more about hockey from this episode, or yeah, did you like go backwards somehow?
No. This is great. I learned cow turds, good hockey, and submarining bad hockey. I think is what that's most of what I gathered. And also, I'm an idiot for thinking CTE is a thing.
Yeah.
Those are my real takeaways.
Submarining, bad hockey, good nuclear warfare. So this episode, Drew just left. I don't know why, but this episode is over. Congrats on listening to it. I hope the crossover works. If it doesn't, then
I had a great time.
Well, I'm really just expecting the checks from DraftKings to start pouring into
Valley. Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, do we get paid?
Put in.